literally grabbed me and he hugged me, and it was probably one of the greatest, I mean, it was one of the best 60 seconds of my 65-year-old life.
Well, that's Steve Graves sharing about the important role of a dad in his child's life, and Steve is with us today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and we're going to hear some great advice from Steve about how to intentionally invest in your son and really equip him for adulthood.
You know, John, I haven't met anyone who really regrets spending that intentional time with their children. I mean, that's a healthy parent, right? You want to spend that kind of time with your kids. But I know many parents who wish they had been more intentional about spending that time. I think of that with my boys. One of the things I didn't do well, now in retrospect, I mean, Trent's out of the home, Troy just graduated, you know, so, but spending individual time with them. I because I had two boys, we just did everything together as guys, right? Whatever we did. And I think that was a shortcoming. I should have spent a little more time with each one of them individually. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about how to do that balance, how to work as a good father to develop that relationship and deposit into their souls the things, particularly your sons, but this will apply to daughters as well, but what your sons need from a dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some great principles for every dad. So lean in and hear from Steve. He and his wife, Karen, have three adult children, and he works in the corporate world advising business owners and entrepreneurs. And Steve speaks and writes about faith and work, and has a book called 41 Deposits, Crucial Conversations for Fathers and Sons.
Steve, welcome to Focus on the Family.
Hey, thanks, Jim. John, good to be here.
It's good to have you. I love this topic, being a father of two boys. I mean, whenever we're talking about being a dad of sons, it excites me.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think these applications will work for daughters as well. There's some differences, but generally what we're going to talk about today is how to be a good dad. Right?
Yes, absolutely. And they do apply to women as well.
You have three children. You have two daughters and a son. And I think they're grown now, right?
Yeah, they are. They're actually, it's really funny. We went from having no married children to all married children in 2 years. We had three weddings. You know, everybody got married, and then we just had our first grandchild not too long ago. So we've moved fully into the parenting of adult children quickly.
That sounds like warp speed, actually.
It is. It is. We need help. We need help.
Yeah. So you've experienced it all rather quickly.
Yes, we have.
So, you know, being that kind of dad, that intentional dad, what was raising your kids like? How would you describe yourself in that regard?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I'm an intentional person by nature. My job's working with CEOs. I advise CEOs is what I do every day. And so I have to be a little proactive and out thinking ahead and around the corners. And so by nature, my wiring is intentional. But, when you're parenting kids, you just kind of get in that zone where you're just doing everything you can do to keep things moving and keep it going. And you get to Sunday and then you start again on Monday and you wake up and all of a sudden people are in junior high and then they're graduating and you just say, wow, what really happened? And so it was really interesting. My girls, I was clearly intentional with them, but my son somehow really triggered some things in me that made me want to make at least even a greater series of intentional deposits into his life, kind of from a dad to a son kind of a thing. And I try to apply it to my family when I can.
Let me make sure dads are hearing this clearly and the wives that love them.
Yeah.
I wrote a book called The Good Dad because one of my concerns is that we as men tend to want to do a good job. And if we're not doing a good job, we kind of recoil, we go and hide. And I think fathering has so many challenges that we're not equipped for. You may be a person that came from a household like me that you didn't have a dad.
Right.
I mean, I was lost. I didn't have a blueprint. Nobody taught me how to be a dad. And you can have a father live in a home, an intact home, and have that same outcome where you didn't really have modeling on how to be a father because your dad was emotionally distant or what have you. So I wanted to ask you that question in terms of that perfection drive that many men have and the fact that no one's perfect. It's okay. You don't need to be working with CEOs. I mean, a lot of men that just heard you went, whoa, okay, this guy's qualified.
Yeah. Well, I hope I at least have something to say to them after 35 years.
But you that's know, the point, the yeah. perfect versus the good.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, if I would have had to have been the perfect dad, I'm not. And that was, to be honest, Jim, that was really my biggest challenge in really putting this into a book. I did it because I wanted to impact my son, and it was a great journey for the two of us. It was an awesome experience for the two of us to bond as him becoming an adult. And I had the outlines, I'd done it, but I'd send my outlines to anybody who wanted them, but I just wasn't really sure I wanted to put it into a book because I'm not the perfect dad. He's not the perfect son. We're not the perfect family. We didn't do the perfect job. And this notion that I'm putting out some prescription that if you'll just, you know, take these 41 pills, everything's going to be perfect. To be frank with you, I had 50. I had 50 deposits. We only got to 41. So I'm like I'm a nine deposit failure. If you really want to get down to
it's
it.
It's an A minus.
Exactly. Give me a solid B plus or A minus. But yes, I am not, you know, it was not the perfect dad, but it's the dad who says, you know what? During the season when my children are with me, I'm going to make sure that I at least devote the kind of stewardship to them that needs to be there. And here's the thing. I don't know. Most parents that I know and I've met, you know, I'm 65, and so I've met a lot of parents in a lot of places. And most parents aspire great things for their children. They really do. And that's believing parents, faith-based parents. It doesn't matter what political party. Most parents aspire great things for their kids. It's just knowing kind of what to do.
Yeah.
And how to get that done. That's where we sometimes go a little foggy.
Well, let's get into it. The title is catchy, 41 Deposits. So how do you define a deposit? What is that? Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you what it meant for me, and I would not at all try to tell everybody that, you know, this is what it's got to mean to you. But for me, I knew this. I knew that I grew up without a dad in my home. I had a godly mom, and that I had at least nine very specific men that played a father figure in my role as I was growing up into becoming an adult. And those men deposited certain things into my thinking, my psyche, my mindset, my belief system, whatever. And so I just sat down one time and made a long list of things that I knew at the end of the day, if I could share with my son what I thought about these things, how I was approaching them, how I was, you know, reaching the challenge of each of these things, and then help him think about them over kind of a really transparent, honest, vulnerable relationship. That was for me the deposit. The deposit wasn't that I'm going to force feed into him to believe a certain way, to think a certain way. And oh, by the way, you need to believe exactly how I do about these 49 things or 50 things, 41, you know, and it because he's a different person and right. God has a different calling for him. Now, when it comes to the core values of life and the belief systems and some of that, I hope that as he migrates into adulthood and he finds his adult faith and on, that I hope we're more aligned than we're not aligned.
Sure.
But a deposit wasn't, I'm just going to kind of like a mold, I'm just going to stamp these into you and you have no, you don't really have any varying to really trust them, believe them, accept them or not.
You added in there, which I think is important, kind of the tying a knot analogy. You know, it's not just a deposit, but you're actually strengthening the fiber of your son's heart by tying this knot. What were you getting at?
Well, my two big goals is I wanted to make some wisdom deposits into his mind, the way he thought about things, and then I wanted to try to make some relational deposits into his heart so that he and I would really have a life connection, you know. And so what happened is that made me think about I have to contextually get inside my kids' lives as they go through inflection moments in their lives, whether it's puberty, whether it's learning, having a date, whether it's being a star on a basketball team, whatever. So fast forward that, you know, with Kyle, I remember I really wanted to somehow make sure that I had tied a good tight knot between the way he was thinking, the way I was thinking, and what he was feeling in his heart and what I was feeling. And I really believe it's kind of like that last verse in Malachi. It's interesting. It's set in a prophetic context. It's not necessarily set in a family building context, but the context is that when parents tie their hearts to their kids and their kids are also tied to the hearts of their parents, there's this two-way tie that's going on. Good things happen.
Yeah.
And that was for me, this realization all the way back to when my kids were younger, I realized that the notion that I'm just going to wrap a really nice tight knot with my children when they're young, and that's going to ride for 50 years is crazy. And it's, I don't need to feel guilty about that. And I don't need to be shamed. It's, the knot's going to fray. It's going to come undone. It's my job to go tie it again and tie it again and tie it again and make sure that, because if I've got that, I've got a pretty good sound framework to work through all kinds of issues, whether they're belief issues, their behavior issues, figuring out how to align adult families, whatever. So that's where the knot comes from.
And it's
from.
Good. I'm thinking, you know, we use different terminology, but what you're saying from another angle is just be intentional about developing relationship with your kids. That's the point.
Yes.
And then cement those values in various ways. You know, a lot of men, we're about process and structure.
Yes.
So when you look at it, we're going, okay, what did you do, Steve? What's the next step? What's step one, two, and three? So when you look at the structure of what you decided to do with Kyle after you identified the 50 things, even though you only got to 41, but we won't talk about that.
Yes.
But what was the structure for you and Kyle? What age did you start?
Yeah.
And I think in there, I would ask you to include this idea, the differential between lecturing and communicating, relationship building. Because I think a lot of us dads tend to, we lecture.
Look, listen, man, I get paid really good money to be a coach, to tell, give my point of view on something that should be happening. I mean, that's how I'm wired. That's my skill set. That's my God-given calling. And so often I have to kind of shift into a different mode where I'm not lecturing or I'm not coaching or I'm not telling them a point of view. I'm creating a conversation with them. The context was this. I made my list, and then Kyle and I agreed that we were going to grab breakfast at a new bagel store in town.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
I know. It was a brand new bagel store. And so he wanted to go. So we joined up and, we decided that we would go there. And, you know, it wasn't the deal, guys, it wasn't the thing that we said every Friday we're going to get together or but we decided we were going to get together every week when we could. He was going into his high school season of basketball. He played basketball. He was really active, and we loved it. But we met every week or every other week all the way through his high school season, and we worked our way through these topics. And some of those topics are what I would call a one bagel topic. Other topics would be what I would call maybe a 12 bagel topic. It just took us a while. And what we didn't do is my intention wasn't to simply come in, lay down my lecture notes. You know, I wasn't some professor where I'm just going to let him, here's everything you need to know about this. What's the next question? Okay, here's everything you need to know about that. What's your next question? And the quicker we can get through the syllabus, quicker we can go do something meaningful. That was not our plan. Our plan was to create some honest, transparent dialogue around the topics that I felt like were the most important topics that were in my heart that I wanted to somehow transfer and put in his heart and his mind. Mm. And so we just wrestled and we talked about them. And what we usually did is we started with kind of top of mind items. And then from that, we would try to slide into the topic of the day. I would always try to have a story or whatever and a Bible verse that we really anchored everything around, but we just stayed with it all the way till he graduated. And then when he graduated, I gave him the notes.
Steve, there was a particular time that you shared about in the book where you and Kyle had a discussion. It may have been around sexual issues or lust or whatever that was. I want you to fill the blank in there. But it really affected him. And I think I want to make sure we cover this because it's the proof of the power of conversation. What happened?
Well, yeah, you know, it was really fun because it was fun and also painful. I came in and I shared with him some of the ways that I struggle and some of the ways that I have failed around this big topic. And so he just listened. And it just so happened that particular day, he had to leave early, and we both had forgotten about it, but he had to leave early. And so literally almost at the very middle of our conversation, he had to bolt. Well, when he bolted, we'd already paid. And so we walked outside. And when we walked out, he literally grabbed me and he hugged me. And it was probably one of the greatest. I mean, it was one of the best 60 seconds of my 65-year-old life. I'm telling you, we hugged each other. He started crying. I started crying, and not a word was said. Mm-hmm. And what was happening, and I confirmed later, but what was happening was he was just thinking about areas that he has failed and areas that he's really human and areas that he struggles in. But more importantly, or equally important, is he was looking at me, his dad, and he was saying, you know, here's my dad who also struggles, who also fails, who also is a human. And so we were just kind of hugging each other and just kind of holding each other and processing the fact that we as men are going to struggle with that, by the way, our whole life. I mean, that's not like one of those that you kind of grow out of when you're 31.
Right.
You know, or when you, as soon as you get married and have kids, no problem with any sort of sexual issues or temptations or struggles. That doesn't go away. It doesn't matter how godly you might be or how many verses you memorize. All those things are crucial, but the temptation itself is going to be with us as long as we're humans. And so that was the moment for us that was a really strong moment.
Well, I think the power of that is the level of intimacy and authenticity in that. When you can have that kind of discussion with your son and he can respond with that understanding, you've connected in such a deep way. That knot that you referred to earlier is a double knot.
Yeah,
it's really tied tight. And my guess would be that he is comfortable coming to you, talking to you about these things.
Yeah.
And that's one of the big areas a lot of dads will miss, because we tell our sons, you know, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. We don't tell them our own failures, our own weaknesses, et cetera, where they can then attach to that. And then you have intimacy.
Yeah. We certainly are able to talk about all kinds of things. And we do. We do today. I mean, we talk about all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And
I would say that was probably established in those early relationships.
No question.
Another thing that you point out in the book, which I totally resonated with and my boys really responded to, was activity-based things, whether it was camping. You did canoe trips, I think, was your thing.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I would encourage every dad listening, and I don't care what age your sons are now, and I'd include your daughters, you know, at different times, but to do activities with them. Boys really respond to that, you know, so they're not just looking at you, hearing your lips flap.
Yeah.
They need to be doing something, and they remember those things for a long time.
Well, the thing is, and we all know this, I mean, we all could write a book on it, but we all know that when you engage with an activity with somebody else, what you're doing now is you're putting something else in the middle of the relational dynamic. We're in a canoe together, canoeing. We're playing pickup basketball. We're playing chess or whatever it is. And so all of a sudden now I've got a whole different toolbox to talk to you about important things or to ask questions, or maybe even, you know, God forbid, I don't even try to talk about anything. We just get in the canoe and we just have a great day without me feeling like I've got to accomplish 17 things with my parenting that day. And
that's where
overly, you know, kind of over-intentional dads, we always struggle. I mean, I have, it's amazing how many CEOs that I'll work with, and often when we end up talking about, you know, parenting or kids or whatever, and I'll just say, look, you know, you're just so wired, and I'm so wired to get stuff done every day. We're not wired to get up and just lay around and do nothing. And so when you intersect your canoe trip or your outing to go hiking somewhere, or let's go stand on the river and fly fish, I find myself wanting to say, hey, would you come over here closer so I can tell you some more things?
Yeah, right.
You know, versus like,
let's maximize just, your time.
Exactly.
I'm totally with you.
Got to double stack, get 16 things done while we're doing one thing, versus let's just go stand in the river about 12 feet from each other and just not talk for an hour. I mean, how can that be good? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Especially to the child.
Yeah.
The child loves that. And by the way, all I've done is earn the right on the way home to maybe ask a better question and to maybe even talk about something in a more transparent way.
Steve, again, you wrote 50 deposits that you wanted to do, and the book is 41 because that's what you got done. I appreciate your honesty. but in that regard, to some dads listening and some wives who love their husbands and know the kind of wiring they have, it is overwhelming. I'm not going to create a list of 41 things. Speak hope into that father and their future relationship with their kids. What we struggle as men getting out of the gate, because we don't know the process. We don't trust the process. We're not sure it's going to work. So we pull back right away.
Right.
So what encouragement do you have for that dad that's going, I love what you're talking about, but I don't know what to do?
Yeah. You know, Jim, that's probably the single biggest reason that I decided to go ahead and write the book, besides getting a green light from my family. I had two friends of mine that live in Utah, and they basically said, you know, just come on, man, you can provide some train tracks. You can provide a framework for somebody that might not be wired to be a pioneer. They might not be wired to come up with the list themselves, but they're executors. They can follow a roadmap. And I just thought about it. I mean, every city I go to, if I don't know how to get to somewhere, what do? I get on my map and I find a map. And somebody that's taken the time to provide the framework makes it easy for me to follow the map. And so all I tried to do is this. I came up with 41 things that were right for me and my son. And basically, most people can take those and use those as kind of a train track to run down and then contextualize it as you go.
I do want to end with maybe the toughest of the questions, that dad that I'm envisioning. And I have friends that are in this spot where their relationship with their teens is so frayed. And, you know, there's lots of reasons for it. There's no blame, but a rules-oriented father who is really driving black and white can cause that relationship to fray. In your experience, I mean, working with the CEOs and then, you know, working with the father-son combos that you have, what are those things that dads should be aware of in their own behavior? Forget the teenager. And we know what they behave like their brains aren't formed yet. So let's just accept that. But as the adult, as the dad, how am I stepping on their oxygen hose and I need to be careful?
Yeah. You know, I think it's important that I can dial back a little bit and I can show to my children that I really have some intentional work that I'm doing on myself. When people can see that you also, that you're not perfect and that you're working on some stuff, I begin to put barriers down. When I think that when you've somehow made me feel that you're in a different place, you're above me, you don't have the problems I have, that's what disconnect oftentimes happens. Yeah. And so, you know, the transparency and vulnerability of a parent, and you don't have to do it by coming in and saying, hey, I'm struggling with these 19 things. You just have to say, you know, I'm really working on some stuff that I know I haven't done as well at, you know, and I need to work on that and whatever. And then the other thing is this, I've seen usually kids love to spend time with parents who also enjoy spending time with them.
Right.
If you somehow just, if you can't get past the kid, the fact that your kids are irritating you and they're driving you nuts, and that's going to come out. And so find a good spot in your mind and your soul and your heart so that you're actually coming across that you're having a good time with them as well.
Yeah.
When you're able to do that, you're able to kind of somehow begin to really kind of tie the knot a little bit one more time.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's not easy, Jim, because we do fail, especially intentional dads. Intentional.
Oh.
We mess up all the time.
Yeah. The other key thing for that dad of a 20-something, a 30-something, maybe older, where the relationship is frayed, what can they do to begin to repair that?
Yeah, you know, I could tell you something that my wife and I are doing with our adult children is we're helping them understand that we don't know how to parent adult children. We didn't know how to parent younger children. We just never told them.
You know? But now they're smart enough to know.
Now they know. But like we've said to them, hey, listen, we're trying to figure out how to be good, effective, responsible parents of adult children. But you're going to have to help us. You're going to have to help us learn what that looks like. And you got to be patient with us. You're going to have to give us some grace. You're going to have to give us some times to fail. It will be some blood on the table sometimes. I can't help that. But like, we're not going to do it right. But the question is, are you willing to help us kind of get involved in being good adult parents? We're going to try, but you got to help us a little bit. So it could be that a parent, a dad of a son that's kind of estranged or not there, somehow maybe over time communicate that, you know, he's trying to learn how to be a good parent of an adult child. Start there without having to go back and rehearse all the water under the bridge from 25 years. Just start there because the 25-year-old son would say, yeah, I guarantee you need some help. I might can even help you. The question is do I really want help? Or is that just a ploy? If I really want help, I might get some help from my 25-year-old.
Oh, yeah, you sure will.
I probably will.
But that's good. Steve, this has been so great. And I hope every dad listening and again, the wives of these dads listening can help take the first step and move in a direction where we can do a better job as a father. Hmm. Steve, again, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, Steve Graves has been our guest today on Focus on the Family, and his really great book is called 41 Deposits, Crucial Conversations for Fathers and Sons. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
I love the idea of intentional conversations that lead to a greater relationship, which is ultimately what we want with our kids, whatever age they are. I want to let you know of a resource that may be a great starting point for you. It's our parenting assessment tool, and it's absolutely free. Go to our website at safamily.co.za and you'll find it under parenting. It takes 5 to 7 minutes to fill it out, and it's called the 7 traits of effective parenting. It'll give you your strengths and weaknesses, things that you're doing well, and things that you probably need to work on. So I'd encourage you to go ahead and do that. And then please get in touch if there's any way that we can help. Our number is 031-716-3300, and our website is safamily.co.za. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to join us next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.